This is Logic, the short and sweet legal podcast for those of us not in the legal field. The purpose of Logic is to inform, educate, and hopefully, fingers crossed, entertain our listeners. I'm Dana Arnold, Executive Director of the Fayette County Bar Association, and this is Logic. Thank you for joining us for the cross-examination of the prosecutors. This is a special episode because of our guests and because I have invited retired Judge Sheila Isaac to co-host with me. Judge Isaac was a Fayette Circuit judge from 1997 to 2008. She had senior judge status from 2008 to 2013. She is now in the retired judges program, still filling in for judges who need a sub. I met her through the Fayette County Bar Association when she served a term on our board of directors. In 2013, she became the executive director of the Fayette County Bar Association, and I became the assistant director. I'm so grateful that she took that job. I got to work with her closely for 4 years. She is a tiny ray of sunshine and one of my favorite people and one of my greatest friends. So when I felt like I needed more prestige to interview Ms. Baird and Ms. Evans, I knew exactly who to ask. I knew Judge Isaac would understand the significance of speaking with new prosecutors and totally give me some street cred. Maybe I can talk her into co-hosting again. Wink, wink.
We are joined by Kimberly Henderson Baird, Fayette Commonwealth's attorney, and Angela Evans, Fayette County attorney. Each are new to their positions. It is the first time in Kentucky that all state court prosecutions in a county will be led by Black women. As such, our two guests are a part of only 1% of elected prosecutors in the United States.
Wow.
So we welcome them and thank you all for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll start with Ms. Baird. Could you briefly explain the responsibilities of the Office of the Commonwealth Attorney?
I can, and it's a little backwards, I guess, since Ms. Evans is going to start, but basically anytime anyone is arrested in Fayette County, they will start with the county attorney. So they will start in, and I'm going to mess this up because I've known her for so long, I'm going to keep calling her Angela.
That's fine.
I think it's
pretty
disrespectful.
I think that's good.
So they will all start in the county attorney's office, and then they will handle the arraignment and preliminary hearing for felonies. Mm-hmm. There will be times if there's a felony, depending on the circumstances, that they may amend it down and keep it down there. Otherwise, those that are the most serious, the murders, the rapes, the robberies, those are the more serious ones, will be held away to the grand jury, and then they will be assigned to us. So those are the ones that we handle here in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office.
Okay, and Ms. Evans, what are the responsibilities of the county attorney?
Yeah, to take it from the criminal aspect, we have, the county attorney has a lot of different responsibilities, but as it relates to the criminal prosecution side, we do all the adult misdemeanors, so Commonwealth Attorney Henderson Baird said, you know, using names and being respectful, we'll keep all the misdemeanors for adults, and sometimes we will amend felonies down to misdemeanors and keep them down in district court. We also do all of the juvenile prosecution, unless they're going to be prosecuted as an adult,
okay,
and then they'll go over up to circuit court. We also do child support collections. So that's the whole state side of getting revenue, you know, back for people who are receiving benefits, you know, that the state is paying for a child who, you know, a parent is not paying the child support that's owed to the child or to the state. So we do that collections. We also do adult guardianships. Hmm. So for people who can no longer take care of themselves, you know, there's a loved one, or maybe the state sometimes comes in and wants to be the guardian for that adult. So, you know, our role in that is to make sure that the person seeking guardianship is qualified, you know, is not going to take advantage of that person.
Right.
So we're involved in that. We also do the other mental health courts, specialty courts, drug court, veterans court, and, you know, and that's a derivative of the prosecution. But again, it's something that we're involved in as well. And then we also do the the ugly property delinquent tax collection that no one likes to hear about. But again, I think we try to make that as friendly as possible. You know,
right.
We do negotiate how to get payments from people, so we try to make it as painless as possible and try to get people ahead before the next bill comes out. So we do a little bit of everything.
And so many do you know the number of employees?
That's what I was going to ask too.
Right now we're around 70.
Okay.
I think we have space for, I think, up to 90. So a lot of administrative staff. You know, attorney-wise, we've got, I think, about 8 to 10 on the prosecution side. But then, again, we also have prosecutors over in child support. And they're kind of separate offices, but because we contract with the state to do the child support collection.
Right.
But there's a whole other set of attorneys in child support as well. So it's,
oh, wow.
It's a big office.
Yeah.
It is. How many is in your office, Ms. Lynn?
We have about 34. We have about 16, 17 attorneys and support staff and victims advocates. So
okay.
That makes up about 35 of us. Wow. The number fluctuates because like we're about 3 attorneys down.
Wow.
We have...
just 3.
Just 3.
How many are you down, attorneys?
Oh gosh, at least probably 4 over in prosecution and probably a good another 4 or 5 over in child support.
And so, and how many here? 3 or 4?
We're down 3 right now, which, you know, it makes it hard when you only have like 5 senior people trying to assign, 42 homicides. It's that kind of scenario, which is why it's
rough.
You know. And so when you hire somebody new, they're usually brand new babies, and so
it's
a little difficult. And then we hired several that came right around COVID, so they've barely, they're just now getting into court and just now starting to really try cases. So we're very bottom heavy on who we have.
Wow.
You know. So.
All right, Ms. Evans,
yes.
Who or what inspired you to pursue law?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. Well, the person who told me I should go to law school was my political science teacher in high school.
Ooh.
And I promptly told her that she was smoking crack. So
she's
said,
like,
no.
Well, maybe you should be a prosecutor.
She knew my mom, she knew my family, and my dad was an attorney, and I'm just like, that looks so boring. Like, you just have a bunch of yellow paper all the time. And I just,
Where'd you go to high school?
Tate's Creek.
Okay.
So I'll give a shout out, Laura's Points. So she is the first one who told me I should. But when I really decided that that's what I wanted to do, I was doing my practicum in undergrad. So my major was in social work.
Okay.
And it was a privilege, and I don't even know how I got the assignment, but I was working at Charter Ridge Behavioral Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, here it was a juvenile facility, but it was an adult facility down there. And just realized how messed up the healthcare system is, health insurance. So we literally had a client who, his time had run out, but he was still very much in psychosis, still taking names for the deep sleep he was going to go into.
Right.
But when we had, our team meeting, his insurance has run out.
Mm-hmm. And he certainly can't work.
Right. And as a 20, I guess I was 20 years old at that, I was like, I don't understand how we're going to send him home. He's not mm-hmm. well. So, I was like, I must go to law school and fix the healthcare system. That's what I was going to do.
Well, we're waiting.
We're still waiting.
Get into that as quickly as possible.
So, that's what inspired me to go to law school. Mm, someone told me that, hey, you can do that in all kinds of different ways. Mm-hmm. I may have thought about it, but I was like, I guess I need to go to law school to change some of these
laws. Change the world.
So, I was one of those students.
If you weren't practicing law, what career would you like to explore?
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know.
Mine's florist.
Oh, you would be a great florist.
I'm just not even that creative.
I didn't say I'd be good.
She'd be good.
I mean, honestly, I'd probably still be in some kind of helping profession somehow. Because it was just so ingrained in me. I probably would have maybe done submissions, which is not really a profession, but that was something.
It's a passion.
Yeah. So it was always, and that was always there too. So international travel, all of that. I think that actually came from church and learning about missionaries, you know, from all over the world. Mm-hmm. So, some kind of paddy field somewhere doing something. I don't know. Trying to save that part of the world. I don't know. So,
What is what do you think is the most important role of a prosecutor?
You know, really to be.
How about the lead prosecutor? Yeah.
Oh, the lead prosecutor.
Your role, that's a different answer.
Well, your role as the county attorney, as opposed to just being someone who works in the county, an attorney who works in the county attorney's office. Is there a special role for you as the leader, as the head of?
Well, yeah, and I'm actually still learning that because, you know, this is the first executive, you know, office that I've been in, even though I was on city council, you know, it's different, you know, legislating, it's with three branches of government. So it's very different being a legislator versus being the executive and, you know, truly being the head of an organization and creating the office, the tone, the culture that I want. Right. And I think there are some things that are already instilled. You know, I think my prosecutors, the defense bar didn't have bad things to say about them. So I'm like, okay, we're, you know, because I came in saying, you know, justice, first of all, and then, you know, equality, transparency, and, you know, let's work on doing things that are data-driven, you know, programming. So,
and I think you said at one time that you wanted the public to have confidence in the system, which I think is
And that comes with the transparency and believing and understanding that, and that what I also said in my speech is, justice means someone's always going to be mad at you, kind of what we were talking about earlier, is that because you have to factor in everything. You know, it's not just what a victim wants or what you know, a defendant wants, or what, you know, witnesses or police officers, whoever it is, you've got, it's our role to factor all of that and then come up with what we think is just given all the circumstances.
Right.
But yeah, truly being the person that helps create more trust in the system that we all know has its problems and its flaws, but.
Right.
True.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you lose the confidence of the public, as prosecutors, it's, we're courts or the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a good outcome.
Yeah. And the good thing about this, too, is that this is for the public. So, like, there's so much information for me just already what we've recorded, like, just the differences between the offices. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that they were two different offices, but it doesn't, I don't know why.
Right.
But now, okay. Now I'm like, oh, okay. Phew. What areas will be your focus as you begin, and are there any new projects you would like to see developed?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question. I'm glad I got a preview, sneak preview of them.
Yeah.
But kind of going back to building the trust in the community, I know I want the county attorney's office to be more of a presence in the community. You know, I think that the Commonwealth attorney's office, you know, has more of a presence, you know, with, you know, Ray being who he was, you know, people knew him, and then, you know, Luanna, and now, I'll say Kimberly, we're friends with each other, you can go by names, you know, and I think that's kind of where the county attorney's office was lagging, so I do want to build that presence so people know, because as I told people during the campaign, you know, anyone can find themselves in contact with the county attorney's office. You know, whether you mess up and get a, you know, commit some crime or even speeding tickets. I mean, we do traffic court. So anything from a speeding ticket to you're in trouble, your kid's in trouble, or your juvenile that you like, you know, you love is in trouble, or, you know, you now have to seek guardianship over a loved one. You know, everyone can find themselves there. So really building that trust and rapport and education of what we do, and that, you know, we're not just prosecutors.
Right.
You know, we really are an office that provides different services and
not just prosecution, but helpful to the administration of justice. And I mean, there, you know, if somebody commits a crime, there's a victim too. So, you know,
because Kolchak collection is part of what we do,
and not making it so scary. I mean, citizens are just freaked out when they get in the system because they've seen so much in media about it, and
very law and order.
So, I think that's a good plan to make it a little more friendly. Or we're going to try to work things out for you. We're not just here to punish you. And your office does do positive things. They're doing collecting child support. It's not just a criminal prosecution office. I think that was a good point that you've got lots of divisions over there that you don't even know about.
And that going back to, you know, when I was on council, my first race, because my whole career's been in government, you know, different aspects of government, which, again, I think makes this role perfect for me right now. But, you know, that's what I campaigned on my first campaign for council, is that just connecting people to government. You know, because, like you said, people are intimidated by it. It's huge, whether it's, you know, state government and someone's just trying to get, you know, their license for whatever profession, you know, get their counseling license to, they are in the judicial system. And now how do you maneuver that to, you know, well, how do I get my trash collected, you know, or how, you know, how do I get, you know, the street light fixed, you know, all kinds of different stuff. People just don't know, and they're intimidated to even call. Well, some people are intimidated to call. There are plenty of people that
nobody in this room.
But so just understanding that, you know, to be that bridge and that connector. So again, letting people know that government can work for
you. Yes,
and it's not always adversarial. It's not just something you just have to go through. The true purpose of it is to help people. Yeah. So.
Ms. Baird, who or what inspired you to pursue law?
I was laughing at Angela, and I don't have like that wonderful story. I don't even know if inspiration is really the right word, but you know, I've always known I wanted to be an attorney since I was little, but I think it really probably came from family members who have been
and the system, lawyers.
Couple of family members who told me they did wrong, you know, they were wronged by the system and all this other kind of stuff. And so I think that's where it probably came from.
Right.
And then watching, you know, Law and Order and LA Law, my mom still jokes that I watched all those shows and still do.
Yeah.
You know, and so they always portray prosecutors as, you know, hateful people and, you know, just hiding evidence. And I read the irony that I'm in this job. So that's I think where it came from, that I wanted to be a defense attorney because I wanted to help those people who are wronged by the system. I wanted to fight the prosecutors.
You want to be a good prosecutor.
Did not want to be a prosecutor.
You're in the wrong office.
That's why I said the irony of what I am.
You got that wrong.
Right.
You messed up.
I 100% planned to be a defense attorney.
Yeah.
And then I was going to go on to the U.S. Supreme Court. That was where I was going
that
all
was
the way
good.
Through... probably law school. That was what my thought was.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a teenager, I'd gone to Washington, D.C. with my mom. She'd gone to a conference. Loved the city. Yeah. So that's why I said that's why I was going to D.C. And so even when I was in high school, kept that thought, got applications for colleges in Virginia and D.C. And my mother said, Richmond, Kentucky hometown mom said, you know, well, you've never really, you know, been away from home, so why don't you go to UK and transfer?
That's
4 years later, I graduated from UK. Still got applications from law school, Virginia, and I think I got a couple in D.C. as well. But, you know, they don't necessarily tell you the financial situation. I don't have anybody up there. So I was like, well, I can't just launch up there by myself.
Right.
Let me kind of make that work. 3 years later, I graduated from UK College of Law. And the only other time I went back, I forgot how many years ago, my daughter was 19. So maybe 10 years ago, I went to D.C. for her class trip. It's the next time I went and the last time I've been up there.
Oh.
You know, and I went and I was like, oh, I could could have been
until
here.
You get the appointment.
Exactly.
Until you get the Supreme Court appointment.
Yeah. Until
you
I get the Supreme Court appointment. That is correct. Yeah. Still waiting on that call. That is correct. So all through law school, I was still going to be a defense attorney. Now, I thought about family law because I took some family law classes. Right. I sat in one family law hearing with Judge Overstreet, and I was like, yeah, that's not ever going to happen.
I'm out.
Right. They were arguing over something.
That was before family court, right?
It was before family court. It was with Judge Overstreet. And I was like, oh, absolutely. We were waiting on one defense attorney after her docket, and she was like, well, let me just take this short hearing. Yeah. So 20 minutes later, they're arguing over something. And I was like, oh, absolutely not. So not doing that.
That was the universe telling you.
That's right. Not doing that. I thought about corporate law. I'd interned before my last year, interned at Columbia Gas in Columbus, Ohio. Loved it. So I thought maybe corporate law. But actually, Allison Connolly, who saw me, I did not like law school at all. I was very quiet. Hated it. Did not like it. Was very quiet. Went in, came home. Did not talk. And so we were doing a lit skills class. She was having us do an opening statement. And, you know, everybody would get up and they'd give critiques or whatever. Well, I mean, I'm used to speaking. I spoke in church all the time. So I was fine. I got up and did this opening and then finished. Nobody spoke. I was like, I have jacked this up. What the heck? Nobody spoke. So ultimately what she was talking about, nobody knew I spoke that well. Nobody, you know, it was great.
Oh, you've never spoken in the class.
I kept my head down and went in and came out. And so she then became, you know, the mother of law school. And just, so one day I had met Ray. Now, my first big girl job in college, I worked at the Urban League, which at that time was at 21C. So walking in my car, I'd pass Ray all the time. So I saw him at the law school and walked up and introduced myself, which was also, I recognized God pushing me up because, you know, I wasn't talking to nobody. And he said, take my internship class. I was like, oh, absolutely not. I'm not going to be a prosecutor. Not going to happen.
No, that's not me.
Right. And he kept saying, take my class, take my class. I was like, okay. Again, I did not know he didn't take the role for an answer. I was like, I'm not doing it. And I had already turned my schedule in. He's like, go get it. So I literally went up at the last minute and got my schedule and changed it to the prosecutorial internship. So I called and I was like, all right, look, I'm here. Don't put me with nobody crazy. Like, what are we doing? And so we put me with Joe Bovier.
That was good.
And I started January of 96 and have not left. I've been here ever since.
Wow.
So when I got here, prosecutors I met, and we were half staffed in. It was all 8 of us, I think. But the prosecutors here were not at all what I saw on TV. You know, so Judge Bunnell was one of them. Joe Bovier was one of them. You know, so there were several prosecutors here it completely changed my idea about prosecutors. Mm-hmm. And they are good people who want to do good, who want to do justice. They were not about, you know, my job is just to send everybody to prison. It was just not. The narrative was that you saw. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, this is new. And so I ended up staying. So for quite a long time, because that thought of being a defense attorney to judge was so long held, I wasn't sure how long I was going to stay. Because I was like, am I just hanging out because it's easier? Is it, you know, but it just, it feels right. It felt right, you know, that kind of thing. And so I stayed. So 26 years later, here I am, you know.
B-O-S-S.
So that's why I laughed at the irony of this, because anybody that knows me and has heard my story knows I plan to be on Supreme Court in D.C.
I'm not
discounting
that at all. I get
attorney. It. So it's something new every day, but it is... I joke that I have no regrets. I don't. While I threaten to quit on a regular basis... It is just because it is overwhelming.
It's a tough job.
But,
especially if you're short staff, like we talked about earlier, too. And you're just like.
And COVID has come, and I mean, just the complications.
So many
for
things.
You all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very hard. Very hard.
Well, what areas will be your focus as you begin, and are there any projects you would like to see developed by your office?
There are so many things, and I'm not saying our office is bad by any stretch. It's not bad. It's just that we have so many new people.
Yeah.
Who, when they came, either just before COVID, during COVID, now, whatever, that they, you're trying to do this spot check training, and you know, trying to do because we were, you know, career prosecutors, we do a lot of training by this is what I remember, you know, that kind of
institutional
thing.
Institutional knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah, and so I'm working on everybody write it down. just going to write it down.
You're going to make a handbook.
Oh, wow.
Correct. Everybody's going to have a book.
That is some work.
It is. And so I started out just right now, and what we're in the midst of doing is I'm having kind of little fireside chats with every employee in the office.
I love that.
And, you know, come and we talk about what are your goals and, you know, tell me some positive aspects of working in the office and some things you'd like to improve on and think for the office going forward. Let me just kind of see where you are. So we did this a few years ago with just the attorneys, but I wanted to do it with every employee.
I think that's great.
Just to kind of see where we are. And that plus, like I said, trying to get everybody, making sure we are consistent on how we're doing things. You know, I don't want to be in a situation where, you know, what happens in a case depends on who the prosecutor is.
Right.
We're going to be consistent about how we do things across the board. And for the most part, we are, because we meet every morning, you know, and we talk about things and, you know, making sure.
You know, now, do you still, I remember that Ray Larson, especially, you had to run things by him if things were going haywire in a trial.
Oh, absolutely.
You want to, you've got an experienced prosecutor under you.
Yeah.
How's that going? Do you think, I mean, I guess they have to run it by you if it's
anything that's going to blow up, anything that's going to be on the news, anything, then I'm going to get a phone call. Right. I better know about it first. That is something from Ray Larson that did not go away. And everybody is really good.
Yes,
everybody is really good about that. You know, that really hasn't changed. The new ones, you know, we've kind of got this, you know, newbie group that, you know, somehow Ray Larson's philosophies about something work its way every day into some sort of conversation.
Yeah.
And I know they're rolling their eyes, you know, the young ones who did not work with Ray.
Right.
Yeah. But that's like, all right, look.
Yeah. You gotta know this.
Yeah. So I joked to one person. I was like, you got an issue with it, take it up with him. You know. So, but he did. I mean, he was. People had the public persona of him, and he was definitely tough on crime, and he was. I mean, you like, you know, Angela talks about, you have, as a prosecutor, you got a bunch of roles. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them is, you know, you have to protect the rights of the defendants, regardless of what's happening. And there are several times, and I know there are some defense attorneys that don't want to ever admit it, but there's many times when we will say, hey, judge, let me just give you a heads up, or this is the offer we did, or, you know, there's many times when we're making sure that, you know, the rights of the defendants are protected. But then you also got the victim screaming in your ear. Mm-hmm. They don't really give a flying flip about any of that. Right. It is, my loved one has done whatever.
Yeah, you're
the
my
victim
lawyer
of,
instead of
absolutely.
You're the state's lawyer.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and right. So they want something done, and then you have to say, we're going to take this into consideration, and I want to talk to you and let me explain what's going on. But at the end of the day, it's my call.
Yes.
And, you know,
so
like she said, everybody gonna be mad at, somebody gonna be mad at you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of emotions and things like that, because when they're just sitting in court and they're seeing, you know, the defendant comes out, they're talking to the judge. The defense attorney is talking to the judge. It's all about, you know, what can I do for you? And nobody's asking him anything. And so now they're mad about that. Well, how come nobody's asking me? Well, okay, this isn't the time. You know, it's just, and they're mad at the defendant coming out, but they can't get to the defendant, so they're yelling at you. I mean, it's just, there's a bunch.
Yeah. Right.
So you're trying to build a lot of trust with them to make sure that they are, you know, heard.
Yeah, because it's probably one of the worst things, one of the worst days in their life.
Oh, absolutely.
At that point, too. You know?
Absolutely. So particularly with what we're dealing with. Somebody's killed somebody.
Yeah.
Or you've shot somebody. Something and
been
robbed.
Awful.
I mean, it's the worst of the worst.
Something has gone terribly wrong.
Exactly.
And.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So then you got the community, you know, like all these shootings. Well, Commonwealth, what are you doing? Well, okay. Look, it's not a one-man show here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was supposed to fix that last
week. Right, like today. So, there's a lot of that happening. You know, there's a lot.
Yes.
So, you know, when you said areas of focus, that's why I kind of laughed. Because there's a lot involved. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to make sure that we are being consistent and fair across the board about what we're doing. That was kind of what Ray got here, because what I did say was, while I did the internship and ended in probably May, Ray offered me a job, and I didn't immediately say yes.
Oh.
And so I said, you got to give me a minute. Because, again, my mind is, I'm going to D.C.
Like,
and not being a prosecutor. Yeah. And so when he, you know, and so then Allison Connolly, which is why I delayed.
Yeah,
I was swearing in for her to come out of, you know, the backwoods of, you know, Australia.
She's in Hawaii today.
Is she in Hawaii? Very good for
so
her.
So you got it right in there.
That's right. I called her. But I was on the first day.
Schedule
around. Yes. I won't be back to the next day. It's like, don't you worry about that. We got this right along. But she was the one that said, you need to be in the courtroom. That also was not a thought process. But, you know, I'm saying this very nicely. This is not how she said it to me, but like my mama, you are going to be in the courtroom. You have a gift. This is not something that could be taught. This is something, you know, and she went on and on and on. And so I said, okay. So,
with your little eye roll.
Right.
Okay.
That, right. So then when Ray called me in, he was like, all right, sis, what's up? So I explained to him again about being a defense attorney and I wanted to protect the rights of the defendants and that kind of thing. And what he said was, I appreciate that. He said, as a defense attorney, your job is to protect, you protect the rights of defendants one case at a time, those that you are on. Mm. As a prosecutor, your responsibility, and the law is, to protect the rights of every defendant that comes in this office. And you are to set the standard in this office about how we want to treat defendants.
Wow.
Okay, I'm in.
Turn that right on.
Right, wow. And so that's what I'm saying. That's not the Ray that people knew. No. That's the Ray I know. Yeah. And so, you know, no matter what they thought about him or what they said, what we knew was the edict of you are not to prosecute anybody that you do not believe is guilty.
Right.
The edict of we are not hiding the ball. So, you know, we don't have an open file discovery system, but it is extremely liberal. I mean, darn near everything we have.
Yeah.
Though the criminal rules doesn't say we have to give it. He is like, you are not hiding the ball. You are going to give everything. We ain't no surprises. We are not. And we have not. You look at our record, we don't get called for any of those things.
Yeah.
Because we are.
That's the way to do it.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly right. That's what we have set the standard about how we are doing things in this office. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, so what I want is for the community to know that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think born and raised in Lexington, I have a little bit of trust, I think, and, you know, and a little bit of respect in this community. And so when I say things, even though it kind of challenges what people think, their notions,
right,
they tend to listen to me because they trust me.
Right.
So I want to make sure the community is aware of who we are, what we do, you know, and that we're doing it well and to the best of our abilities. I want us to definitely do more community service. You know, we used to do that. I was born in, you know, doing community service all my life. My mom did. She always did social services and work, and I always tagged along and always helped and volunteered in all kinds of things. And I think, therefore, you have an obligation to give back to the community in which you serve.
Right.
And I think it also would give, you know, gives people perspective. You know, not everybody is like you. Not everybody gets to go home and, you know, has choices being all equal and, you know, not have to live without gunfire and those kinds of things. Right. So I want our office to be more involved and definitely starting to work more with the young people. You know, a lot of times we'll have juveniles that are charged with murder coming up and people will say, oh, I know that person when they were little, and then looking at me like I've done something wrong. Oh, you gave them this amount of time. I was like, well, no.
Oh,
I wasn't there when that happened. No. But, you know, I got into this conversation with one person we had prosecuted, and he got murder and a series of robberies, and he got a substantial amount of time. So he was talking about the system giving him a lot of time. And I said, okay, but you know he was, like, accused of two murders and, like, a lot of robberies, right? So he started talking about he saw this kid when he was younger, knew him when he was little and, you know, that kind of thing, and he tried to mentor him. And then he said, but his mom didn't have the best boyfriend, and he kind of was going a different direction. And I said, see, and here's the problem with the community. I said, you saw him before he got to me. You knew he needed a different direction. You should have stepped up more to be the mentor. What happens is you wait until now. My options are somewhat limited. Right. About what I mean, I don't know what you, he's killed like two people. What do you want me to do about that? You know, and I'm not saying everybody is, you know, send them away for the rest of their lives, but I need people to understand my options are somewhat limited once you get to me.
Yes.
And I 100% recognize the bad childhood and, you know, and the issues that happen. I 100% get that. But it's where that balancing thing comes from. You know, I can't put you in diversion if you're charged with murder.
Yeah. Right.
I can't just give you counseling when you're charged with murder. I mean, I'm I'm limited in what I can do. Now, we do have, like, we've got a diversion program for, you know, lower level felonies and a deferred program. And, you know, we have options for those that are not charged with as serious crimes. But, you know, it's a lot of times the people with the more serious ones have something to say.
And especially if there's, you know, someone could have intervened earlier mm-hmm. and could have made that outcome different.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like, right. That's just sad.
That's right. Sad. So that's one of the things with the community. When you, yeah. We used to have a village more so that, you know, if you did something wrong, you know, you got beat before you got home. Yeah. Because you had a whole bunch of moms before you got there, a whole bunch of people in that community looking out for you. That we moved into this not my problem.
Yeah.
That everybody's just kind of turned a blind eye. Yeah. And so I think this is a product of the issues that we're having that, you know, people say something, but I was like, okay, but you saw it. What's going on? Oh, well, I'm not going to say anything. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I wish we could get back to that village.
Oh,
that's,
I love that.
It's a great state.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Great. Now we're going to enter into the lightning round, ladies. Judge, would you ask the first question?
At what time of the day do you get your best work done?
Probably starting about 4:35 o'clock
in the evening.
In the evening.
Okay.
Yeah, because people stop asking questions, the phones stop ringing, everybody's leaving, and then I can roll on for 4 hours.
Okay, minus people intruding. At 11 a.m., that's when I can shut the door and just...
11 a.m.?
Like
to what time? When does it go?
Oh, probably till 2. Like, if I had my way, that's...
So, do we not eat lunch?
During that time.
I could eat earlier and then just work, but like when my brain power is like, let me focus. Yeah, it's, and I don't know, it might be subliminal because I know everybody's at lunch, but yeah, that's when I really want to work. I'm like,
Your first job as a teen.
Not sure I had a job as a teen.
First job.
I was going to say my first big girl job was at the Urban League. When I graduated high school.
No menial.
I didn't work in the restaurant. That was just
no Rose's department store in the toy place.
No, volunteered a lot.
Totally random.
Oh, that's probably true.
Unpaid. Yeah. Yes, I was a public servant even back then.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely.
Ms.
Evans, first job.
I was the neighborhood babysitter.
Oh.
But then my first real, like, tax job, I was doing hanging door hangers for Domino's.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What that paid? Do you remember what that paid?
Oh, no.
Per door hanger or
30 minutes?
Just hourly.
Free.
Yeah, it was hourly. I mean, it was like $2.75 was probably a minimum wage. Yeah, it was not a lot of money. But
okay.
Yeah.
Favorite TV or movie lawyer, Ms. Baird.
I don't know if I have a favorite one. Like, I like Jack McCoy on Law and Order.
Oh, okay. We'll take Jack there. And Ms. Evans. I know this is a hard one. I don't.
Oh, gosh. It's supposed to be rapid. And I don't even remember his character, but the one that really comes to mind, because I feel like it's the most powerful. Matthew McConaughey and Time to Kill. Time to Kill. Like that scene.
Okay.
It's just like,
yes. All right, there you go.
Make them believe me. What would you have to do to find me not guilty? And just, he's just tearful. It's like that whole reconciliation.
Maybe we do. I'm going to answer this question too because I love Better Call Saul.
We're doing shows next. Are we doing?
Oh, no, we're not going to do shows.
Okay.
What was the last good book or podcast?
So, reading is a wonderful hobby that I have not had for many, 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 many years.
It's not a pleading.
Yeah, right, correct. Yeah, I mean, I got plenty of those.
There you go. What was this pleading?
I had a couple of good ones.
I don't know if any of them are good.
Oh.
But I do like the author is Steve Martini, who writes a lot of good law books.
Right.
You know, fiction.
So you don't mind watching, reading about, like, I won't do it. It's all usually bad.
No, I'll fuss through the whole thing. Like, not how that works. Like, on Law and Order, when they're like, that's not an objection. That's not a real thing. Or they'll say, but the question before was all hearsay. Like, what are you doing? I'll fuss through the whole thing.
That's my favorite. I can't watch that. No, I can't do it.
Yeah, see, it's too upset. I'm like,
I'm critiquing it all.
My favorite is when they're like, I plead innocent. And I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah,
that's
right. You're right. There's no innocent.
I was like, I'm not an attorney, but I think that's not right.
Right.
We had a big time getting the local channels 20 years ago to stop saying that.
Yeah.
Oh, they would be out on the courthouse lawn going, the defendant pled innocent, and we're like, no, there's no such thing.
Are you a baby child just born to this world? That's the only innocent.
There you go. It's my job. And that's it. That's the end of that innocence thing. Okay, what is your guilty pleasure? Food.
Ooh.
Spare.
I don't know if guilty is the word,
like something that you would love to eat that's so caloric and so bad for you.
Beatty's Mongolian Grill.
Oh.
And chicken marsala at Carrabba's.
Yum.
Right, my two favorite. Mm. Yeah, right, because they're like equal.
Not a particular dish.
At
just
BD's?
Any food, yeah.
At BD's is my combination of the chicken and vegetables and stuff that put together that they cook on the grill.
Yeah, because they do it on like this.
So it's not even a dessert? Okay.
See, I don't is what gets me killed. I don't like sweets much, and I definitely don't like chocolate.
Thing that we could have said, what don't people know that would be interesting about you?
Yeah, yes. I don't do sweet. I don't do sweets much, and I do not like chocolate.
She would probably tackle you for some ice cream. Judge would come
not
after
mint,
you.
Not okay, mint. Not any kind of fruit.
Just please no fruit.
Yeah.
Mm. Only chocolate calories.
Yeah. All right. Was Evans food?
Okay. If we're really thinking guilty, so the apple walnut crunch from Rafferty's.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then just something that's always in the house. It's more of a favorite, but just green olives.
I love them. Do you like them stuffed?
Yeah.
I love
pimento,
the blue cheese.
Blue cheese, but that's
green.
Yeah,
all of those
that's when I know I need to go grocery shopping when the green olives are gone.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So, what you have to have stocked in your house.
What's yours? Well, ice cream. Oh. Besides ice cream.
Ooh, like steak, french fries.
You like fries.
Yeah, because I don't really think.
Tiny coffee cups.
Tiny cups. I just take a little bit.
Oh, and our cookies. We used to have our little Lotus cookies. That we used to have our 2 o'clock coffees.
From the Biscoff?
Yes, the
Biscoff.
Yes.
Oh,
the flying.
Pretend like I'm on
the Biscoff. It just takes
me back. I'm going somewhere.
I'm traveling. You did that all 2020, didn't you?
My travel pillow.
I was just like,
right.
I like
my headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and last one. What series have you recently binged watched?
Or
could
go
back.
You have a lot of time.
I've realized.
What was your favorite binge?
Bridgerton.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I like period pieces.
I do.
Yes. So it was just all that. But
the costume is good.
Yeah.
The cinematography is great.
Season 2 wasn't as much. So
right.
I think they've lost some viewers, but I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Penelope's next.
Right.
I know.
So, yeah. That's
all right, Miss Bridget. You got to follow that.
I was ready to tell. I'm supposed to follow
that. Yeah, you got to follow.
I can help. I probably watched it. I can help.
So I'm going to tell you what I first wrote down. I first wrote down Bob Hart's Abishola, Big Bang Theory.
Oh, love those.
And
love
Barney
those.
Miller, ironically enough, that I've been sitting there watching lately.
Barney Miller?
Yes. But now that one, I have. I've been I don't know. I used to watch a long time ago, and I started watching again, and it's quite humorous.
Yes.
So I usually go home and just kind of, like, decompress.
Yeah, you need to.
I'm kind of the ones that I watch, which all kind of funny.
Just kind of, like, turn it on. I turn on the TV in the background, like a radio.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's what I had been doing. So that's why when you said that was kind of the ones, like, not binge watching, but that's what I've been doing and watching. And it will kind of do those back to back. But then when you were like talking about series and going back to back, it's very odd. But do you remember when Squid Game came out?
Yes.
I was watching it and got so addicted. I was like, this is the weirdest freaking movie. But I was like, now let's watch the next one.
Was it in Korean subtitles?
Yeah.
It's a Korean show.
Yeah,
some
of it was.
Did you, so you heard it in Korean or it was dubbed in English? Were you having to look at
I think it had subtitles.
Okay, here's what happened.
I
discovered Korean television.
Ooh.
The Amazing Attorney Woo.
Oh, yeah.
is fabulous. And, but I that, like yeah. to watch it in Korean because
with the subtitles,
the dubs are bad actors, and I can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, so you have to be, you know, you got to read.
Your eyes are
yeah. Now yeah. I think it was a combination. Of
like
the two.
I need
but
something else.
It was just
else.
Quirky, and there were all these court scenes in mm-hmm. it from Korean.
Okay, is it yeah. like Ally McBeal?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
And it's
oh, okay.
real weird because when you first like go weird. In, she's autistic.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's
so
right.
she
yeah.
doesn't
the
speak
attorney?
Until she's
yes.
4 years old. They show her when she's little.
Yeah.
And her dad gets beat up by some crazy person on the street. And so she goes in and she just, when this is happening, she just starts going, it'd be like KRS 240.372. And she would just like, she had memorized, her dad was like, she's talking. She had read, they were both
she
lawyers.
She just read those.
She,
so
and
she
her
had
mother,
read
all
and she remembered.
And that's all she did.
She'd read in the law books, like
she
they said.
read
in the law books.
So in the trial, she comes up with, and her brain is just like, the pages are going. She has a photographic
okay.
memory. But there's these whales. She's like, kind of, they have these whales. It's just, you got to stay with it two episodes.
Okay.
But the law scenes are awesome.
What's the name of it?
The Amazing Attorney Wu. It has a 100%
on Rotten Tomatoes?
On Rotten Tomatoes. On audience
yeah,
score.
Really?
I've never heard of this.
It's on Netflix, right?
I think it's Netflix.
It sounds like
so
another
now,
one of
you know,
your
when they suggest everything shows. There is just Korean shows.
For you?
No,
like,
I just watched that one. I can't.
That's the problem.
It's like suggested for Sheila. And I'm like...
You messed up the algorithm. Yep.
I did. I messed it up. But they do make some, I don't know, you wouldn't say it, but they've got some TV production over there. But that one is good.
Yeah. Do you want to close or do you want me to close? Let's
just do it. I love to be able to say this. Madam Prosecutors, thank you so much for talking to us, educating us, and entertaining us today.
Yes. Thank you so
wonderful.
Much for
thank you.
I know you guys are so busy.
Visit back in 1 year and see what's going on.
Okay.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Let's do it.
Okay.
That'll be fun.
Yep. A Where Are They Now series.
Oh,
that's another podcast.
It is.
Thank you for listening to the Logic Podcast. If you ever need an attorney in the Central Kentucky area for any legal matter, please call the Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral Service at 859-225-8644 between the hours of 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Or you may go online to our website, www.fcba.com, click on the Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral Service tab at the top, and make an online request any time of day. The Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral Service is a public service of the Fayette County Bar Association.